Greetings, this is Chris Temple, editor and publisher of the National Investor. I'm joined today in the first of a series of interviews and updates I'll be doing with some of our featured opportunity companies by Curtis Moore of Energy Fuels. He's the Vice President of Corporate Development. He also uniquely, unlike a lot of management of such companies that I visit with, also deals on the company's behalf with utilities. He's pretty much one of the go-to guys for me in the uranium space, which is one that frankly animates me as much or more than any other sector right now, folks. Some of you have already seen the report that I did on the uranium space generally and on Energy Fuels specifically. If you haven't or you need a refresher, go to nationalinvestor.com and click on Featured Opportunities where you'll find it. First of all, Curtis, thank you for taking the time from an industry conference in Spain that you're at right now to join me this morning.
Yeah, happy to do so, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, you know, I talked in my report on uranium and on energy fuel specifically about my view, and I'm paraphrasing what I say at the end of it right now, but basically in almost 40 years now, in and around the investment world, I've seen a lot of stories, a lot of compelling points where certain markets are out of favor and they're ready to rebound. But I can count on the fingers of one hand the number of times in almost 40 years that I've seen as beaten up a sector as the uranium space has been, and yet a more compelling and really overwhelming case for a turnaround to come, one that could perhaps in the end be violent. When I sent out an email the other day to our audience about the report on uranium and energy fuels, I said there were two numbers that people needed to get their heads around. The first one was 20, 20 being the percentage, 20% of our overall power grid in the U.S. that is supplied by nuclear power. The other number is 97. That is how much of our uranium that we use in the U.S. to fuel those reactors that comes from overseas, and about 40% or so of it from Russia and companies within Russia's orbit. Now, last week, there was, I think it was on Friday, Curtis, that the Russian Duma started to debate a piece of legislation that could really cause major problems for the U.S. and our energy independence. Tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. No, happy to. So, you know, you're correct that right now about 40% of our uranium and nuclear fuel, and actually those are numbers from 2016. I actually think the number is probably higher today because of a couple things that have happened out there. But a very good chunk, you know, approaching half of our uranium and nuclear fuel used in U.S. nuclear reactors comes from Russia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and also increasingly China. And, you know, historically, Russia has been a good trading partner and a good supplier for our nuclear power plants. But, you know, as we know, you know, some of the tensions between the U.S. and Russia have been on the increase recently. And look, we all hope that we can live peaceably and, you know, happily ever after. But, you know, we're, you know, trying to raise this this dependency, this concern about dependency to members of the U.S. government, elected officials and government officials. You know, and just trying to argue that we need to make sure that we have a viable uranium mining and nuclear fuel sector in the United States. You know, it'd be great if if we can be friends and with Russia for the long term, but I just don't think we should be putting all our eggs in that basket at this point.
Well, and one of the things that I've written about a while back is, you know, we see the Trump administration floating the idea of tariffs on other imported materials. Steel and aluminum have been in the news most of all, and one of the justifications given, in fact, that needs to be given in a legal sense when it comes to global trade, is that America's national security is at stake. I can hardly think of a more compelling case, in my view, more than steel and aluminum, where our national security is at stake and our power grid is at stake when we're importing almost all of the uranium needed to fuel reactors that supply one-fifth of our overall power when we have that uranium right here. Now, Curtis, Energy Fuels, for whom you work, and Urent Energy, another U.S.-based company, filed a petition specifically back in January to try and do something about this and bring this to the attention of the government, cause the government to move. Tell us about that, if you would.
Sure. So, you mentioned steel and aluminum. So this is basically the exact same process in a petition that we have filed with the U.S. government, actually the U.S. Department of Commerce. It's actually Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act, I believe, of 1962. And it basically allows the president to utilize his national security authority to adjust imports of certain goods that have a bearing on national security. Now, I tend to be kind of a free market guy, and want to see free trade around the world. But, you know, you mentioned our just extreme dependence on uranium, and especially on uranium from companies, where tensions are high right now. So we actually believe that we have a very, very strong case, actually a stronger case than steel and aluminum, for uranium, in terms of, its bearing on energy security, but also national security. So, we filed that petition and, we've proposed a trade quota that basically reserves 25%, only 25% actually, of the U.S. uranium market for U.S. producers. We can still import another 75% from others, including Russia and all that. But we just think that we need to have a viable uranium mining industry in the United States. So that's what we're doing right now.
Well, and speaking to that and getting more into the fundamentals specifically of energy fuels, you know, one of the things I write in my report on your company is the optionality that energy fuels has. That's a word that a lot of people that are in resources or look at mining companies, energy companies or whatnot use. And basically, folks, what I mean by that is that there's a lot of companies in these spaces, and of course acutely uranium, that have tremendous shut-in potential to increase production but can't right now because of a weak market. But when prices recover, there are some companies, and energy fuels is the best story that I know, folks, that are going to be able to exponentially increase their production, and really with very little added capital costs and that type of thing. First of all, I want to talk about the pricing structure and then energy fuels' own production currently and what the potential is for ramping it up, provided the market turns around, whether it's helped by this 232 petition or not. You know, we saw several years back near triple-digit prices for uranium. They're a fraction of that now. The spot price is something like $20 and some change. A lot of utilities, however, tie up contracts long-term, multiple years, to make sure that they're guaranteeing steady flows of uranium that they need to fuel their reactors. And I think in your case, Curtis, correct me if I'm wrong, the contracts that Energy Fuels is still selling into are above $50 a pound, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I think our guidance is, you know, we have some of our contracts that are higher, some are lower. I believe our guidance is actually an overall price of sales price of, I think, $45 or $48 per pound this year, just because we also have one contract that we sell on spot. But yeah, you're right. We're lucky. We have a little bit of insulation from today's low prices, though. You know, honestly, not enough. We need to have higher levels of production and higher levels of sales in order to to get to a better cash flow position in our company. But you mentioned this optionality. We're going to produce probably, you know, 400. Our guidance is 460 to 520,000 pounds of uranium this year, which really is not that much. But you also have to keep in mind we're kind of doing that with our foot off the gas. Somewhat distressingly, that still makes us likely the largest producer of uranium in the United States. But that's more of an overall, commentary on how unhealthy our industry is. But you know, we're happy to be the number one producer, but we can do so much more. If we saw pricing get up into kind of the mid 40s, maybe $50 per pound, again, that's a final sales price. We believe that we could get to 2, maybe even 2.5 million pounds of production per year within a 6 to 12 month time period, which is probably quicker than anybody else. And the other thing that I'd like to emphasize is that we are producing right now. We've proven we can do it. It's one thing to talk about producing, and it's another thing to actually go out and put uranium in the can and go make a sale to a utility. So I think we're going to be very well positioned for a price recovery, whether it comes by Section 232 or just the general market fundamentals, which also point to higher prices down the road.
Well, and I want to close on that because a lot of people will look kind of with blinders on at the U.S. sector and, you know, the uranium industry in this country, the amount of power that is generated by reactors has been pretty static at around that 20% mark for quite a long time. It's not going to change much in the near future. You've got a couple old reactors that are being taken offline. Several have been saved recently that might have been lost. But, Curtis, that long-term story is really all about emerging markets, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the real driver of nuclear energy and uranium markets in the future is China, and India, Russia, South Korea, to a lesser extent. I mean, I think the number is China has 30 reactors that are under construction right now. They did have kind of a little, I guess, a pause in their new build program over the last, 18 months to 24 months as they built, some of their new generation of reactors just to, make sure they got their supply chains in order and the testing went well and all that. And it's, I think what I'm hearing now is that they're going to ramp construction back up again and start meeting their targets that they've stated. It's a massive nuclear program, and they're a huge buyer of uranium now. Right now, most of their uranium is coming from Kazakhstan. They have a big mine in Africa that they're trying to get up and running, even though they're having some issues with it right now. Long term, that's where the growth is. Though, I mean, I'll say that the United States is still the world's largest nuclear program, and even if we have a few shutdowns here and there, and there probably will be in the coming years, we're still going to be probably the largest program in the world until at least the early to mid 2020s. And even after China surpasses us, we'll still be a top two or three market.
Wow. Well, again, I, in the report that I did, and again, folks, go to nationalinvestor.com, click on featured opportunities. I liken what has gone on in uranium somewhat to what we saw with crude oil. You had prices collapse, production had to be cut. That has helped to get the market back towards some equilibrium, maybe even more than what equilibrium would be as we see crude oil approaching $70 a barrel. Production cuts have been in the news with uranium, the two big cheeses in the world, Kazakhstan and Cameco, have cut production. And I'll tell you what, you need to read that report, get your head around this space. This is really one of the most compelling stories for a turnaround I've ever seen. Curtis, thank you much. We'll have you back again in the not-too-distant future.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris.